God is marshaling his army for the rescue of his truth. He is calling now to battle both the aged and the youth. You can hear his mighty summons in the thunder of his word. Let us then be valiant soldiers in the army of the Lord. Let the watchman in the tower keep his post with sleepless eyes. Let the private out on picket guard against the least surprise. For the order is forever to be ready at a word. There must be no sleeping soldiers in the army of the Lord. 'Tis a war that calls for valor. 'Tis a conflict with the world. There can be no furlough granted. Never must the flag be furled. We can never cease the conflict till the summons home be heard. We have all for life enlisted in the army of the Lord. Let us not be weary, comrades. Let us faint not by the way. Though the night be long and dreary, soon will dawn millennium's day. Let us keep the campfire blazing. Let us sound abroad his word. There are glorious victories coming for the army of the Lord.
I told Bob I may have to preach a sermonette so I could get him to preach all the way to the end of the hour. But then he told me he may be here till 9 o'clock. I knew it was a joke. Well, I thought it was. As I considered being able to, it is a pleasure for me to introduce our speaker to you. Maybe not all of you do know him. Bob is, I met him probably around 1980. Time of my life when I was in high school, and as high school went, came and went, and we graduated, and many of the young people we hung around with, every time I'd come back, there was somebody else missing. But Bob was always here. I always had good conversations. Finally, he moved out to Arizona. We've had a lot of time to share our dreams and our aspirations for the Church of Christ, our sorrows, our weaknesses. There's a scripture that says that you don't let anybody be your preacher unless he's worthy. And that's why I told you what I just said. I had an opportunity to hear him be called into God's service. After many years of myself telling the Lord, have you looked at this guy? Do you see what I see? And when the Lord convinced him, we've had the pleasure of having him in our congregation, teaching our people. I say this not to make Bob look so high, because I know that's not his desire. I say it because I want each of you to know, and maybe I should say to all you folks here in Missouri, this is still home. I've been trying to get him to think of the mountains as home, but you know, every time he comes back, he's coming back to God's country, he says. And I know he enjoys it. That's kind of our little joke. One other little thing I'll say is that I'm 2 weeks older than Bob, and he's always... We have the standing thing between us that my 2 weeks more of life's experience is very important. You know, he can come to me anytime. From what I say, you know how I feel about Bob. And I have had the opportunity to listen to him, and I know you're going to enjoy that opportunity tonight, and I hope that you'll listen. He is someone who's been here. All you young people that are here, I hope you listen. I hope maybe it helps you to see how important it is to be there always. And so I give you my brother and yours, Bob Hedrick.
Thank you, Joel. You know, it's not so much the 2 weeks that I envy my brother Joel for, it's the hair on his head. You know, people have been asking me all day, so you nervous? Yeah. But I figure if three little girls can come up here and stand before you, I reckon I can. Roger was talking last night about how hard it is preaching to so many people, especially when you know them all. But I think I got him beat, because I think I'm related to half of you. Between my family and my wife's family. And I also have an announcement for the young peoples. Tonight I'm standing behind the pulpit, so you can believe what you hear. Okay? Believe me this time. Those of you who want an explanation, ask one of them, and hopefully they'll be able to tell you something that they learned at camp. Some of them told me they'd never believe a word I said. You know, it's hard to believe, but the reunion's already almost two-thirds over. Just flew by. We've had a real wonderful time getting together and visiting one with another. It's nice to come out of the world for a short time, not to have to worry about deadlines and work, school. And it's just a pleasure to renew your strength spiritually. I think sometimes we renew ourselves spiritually as much between services, visiting one another with points of the gospel, as we do in the service itself. This is kind of like an idyllic scene. It's a beautiful day outside. Everybody's here wearing their best clothes and everything, but I'd like to take you to a different place. We'll take you to a battlefield. A dirty, filthy place. There's no green grass and no trees. It's just dirt, mud. All the sounds of war being fired at you. All around you are wounded and dying. That's the real world. That's the world we live in. We sing songs. We just sang one in the song service about onward Christian soldiers. Do you consider yourself a soldier? One of the songs in the book is, "Am I a soldier for the cross?" Are we? God is marshaling his army. Are we part of it? I think sometimes we think that the physical world is what matters in the real world. The real world is spiritual. If you don't get anything out of this sermon, except to think on a different level, then I'll be happy. The deadlines you face at work, the homework, the school, the relationships, and your families and friends, what's most important is spiritual. It's not the house, it's not the jobs. And this spiritual world is a battlefield, and we need to recognize it as such. In the physical world, if an ordinary soldier were to walk through a battlefield like he's walking through Walmart, he would not survive. You must recognize that he's on a battlefield. You must be prepared. What makes a good soldier? I got a list of a few things I wanted to bring up. What makes us a soldier if we are going to be God's army? First thing is courage. Courage for those three little girls to come up here and stand before you. Courage is that firmness of spirit, that moral backbone, which, while fully appreciating the danger involved, nevertheless goes on with the undertaking. Bravery is physical. It's an act. Courage is mental and spiritual. It's moral. You may be cold all over, and your hands may tremble, and your legs may quake. Your knees may be ready to give way. But even though you have all these physical imperfections, you still go ahead and do it. That's courage. We have numerous examples of courage in the scriptures, and I want to turn to a few of them. First one is in Numbers, in the 13th chapter. This is when the Israelites sent spies into the land of Canaan. And I'm just going to read part of the story. I think most of us already know it. They go in and they see these giants, and that the land is truly a wonderful land. It's already occupied by many people. I'm going to read the 27th through the 30th verse. This is Joshua and Caleb's report. And they told him and said, "We came unto the land whither thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there," which I believe were giants among men. "The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan." And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." They had a formidable task in front of them, but Joshua and Caleb were ready to go. Unfortunately, the people of Israel didn't, and it cost them their lives. It cost them to wander around the desert for 40 years. They didn't have the courage. They were not the army of God. God had to renew his army. When they came back the second time and were willing to cross that line and inherit the land that God had given them, when they had the courage, God gave it to them. Everybody knows the story of David and Goliath. Another example of courage. That's one we've been taught since we were children. But do we forget as adults? It's not a physical battle. It's spiritual. How many of us have our Goliaths out there that we have to face? And we have to face them. We cannot run away. Another example of courage is found in the Book of Mormon in Nephi, 1 Nephi, in the first chapter. They just run out from Jerusalem, and Nephi's dad Lehi had a dream and told him to go back. And I'll start with the 59th verse. And it says that it came to pass that I, Nephi, returned from speaking with the Lord to the tent of my father. And it came to pass that he spake unto me, saying, Behold, I have dreamed a dream in which the Lord hath commanded me that thou and thy brethren shall return to Jerusalem. For behold, Laban hath the record of the Jews and also a genealogy of thy forefathers, and they are engraven upon the plates of brass. Wherefore the Lord hath commanded me that thou and thy brothers should go into the house of Laban and seek the records and bring them down thither into the wilderness. And now behold, thy brothers murmur, saying, It is a hard thing which I have required of them. But behold, I have not required it of them. It is a commandment of the Lord. Therefore go, my son, and thou shalt be favored of the Lord, because thou hast not murmured. And it came to pass that I, Nephi, said unto my father, I will go and do the things which the Lord hath commanded. For I know that the Lord giveth no commandments unto the children of men, save he shall prepare a way for them, that they may accomplish the thing which he commandeth them. That takes courage. He knew what he was getting into before he even left. But it was a commandment of God. Another thing that a soldier must have is resolve, commitment, dedication to the cause. In the Civil War, there was a general, a famous general, his name is Stonewall Jackson. He got his name by, they had to defend a spot on the battlefield, and he did. He was greatly outnumbered, but he withstood, and he won the battle for his army. And many men of his were amazed at his courage, his resolve, his commitment to what he'd been commanded to do. And he said, this is his quote, says, Captain, my religious belief teaches me to feel as safe in battle as in bed. God has fixed the time for my death. I do not concern myself with that, but to be always ready. No matter when it may overtake me, that is the way all men should live, and then they will be equally brave. Are we that committed to the things that God has commanded us to do? I already talked about Joshua. I'm going to talk about him again. In the book of Joshua, in the 24th chapter. This is a oft-quoted verse. But it says volumes about commitment. Making a lifelong commitment. Because by now, Joshua is an old man. He's faced again with the trial that he must go through, the example he must set. And there are evil things coming into the house of Israel, different gods that were people were beginning to claim onto. And he says in the 14th verse, it says, Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth. Put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye shall serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua had made his commitment early in his life. This is now late in his life, and he still has that commitment. It's a continual thing. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime deal. It's a daily decision to be committed to to a God who is willing, to be committed to you. You know, when you see the news and you see about firemen being killed, you never see them one at a time. Firemen always die in bunches, in groups. As far as one of the unwritten rules in the fire station is, no one goes in alone and no one goes out alone. If anything happens in a fire while you're in there, you know that you have one or two other guys that are going to do everything they can to pull you out, even risking their own life. On a battlefield, when you're in the trenches and Christ is standing there right next to you, when you know that the object of the advance, the assault that you're prepared to make, when it's time to come out of the trenches and make your assault, you know that Christ is right next to you. But that goes two ways. When Christ is ready to go and make his assault, he has to know that you are right next to him. If you're expecting God to be with you, you have to be with him. There's no other way to do it. Another aspect of being a good soldier is obedience. Nice thing is, we got a really smart general. We got God for a general. Who else could you want? Nephi, as I read, when he received the commandment of the Lord, he says, okay, let's go do it. He was obedient to the commandments of the Lord, to the orders of his general. How often do we receive an order from the general and think, well, I got a better way. If we do this differently, then I think we'll do better. Or we say something is too hard. We can't do that. If we say we can't do it, it's because we're really saying we won't do it. Like Nephi said, there's nothing that God's going to command us to do that He won't give us a way of doing it. We have to trust God enough to be obedient. When He says go, we go. When He says stay, we stay. When He says do this, we do that. I wonder sometimes if we're not like an army of four-year-olds. You know, we're supposed to be childlike as a little child. I think sometimes in some aspects we are, but I think that there are some aspects about a four-year-old that are not desirable in an army. If we're an army of four-year-olds, and God's objective is over there, He's got to march us through a huge Toys R Us store. How many of you that are parents would take 10 four-year-olds and try and get them from one end of a Toys R Us to the other? God says, okay, let's go. So we go, okay, let's go. We'll start marching along, and all of a sudden, the new Mighty Morphin Power Ranger Velociraptor T-Rex is out. I got to have that. And God's over here trying to say, no, it's way over here. Okay, we'll come back. And we'll start marching down the road again. That new sports car sure looks good. That new boat. Whatever it may be. We have so many distractions in this world. So many temptations. And God's trying to get us from one end to the other. Because He knows that the Toys R Us store is not the goal. It may be for a four-year-old, but it's not the goal for an army. He has a place prepared for us much better than a Toys R Us store. Life is full of distractions. We're often too willing to be distracted. My mom has many stories of me when she asked me to do something, being distracted. Asked me to clean my room, and I'll be in there for 3 or 4 hours. Haven't cleaned a thing. I got distracted. I was playing with something else. But God's not like Mom. He asks us to do something. He expects us to do it. He doesn't accept excuses for, well, you know, I was going to, but I was just going to take a little detour here, and He won't take it. It's nice to have God as a general, because He dictates the strategy that we're going to follow. I don't know anybody else that can see the big picture better than God. But sometimes in His instruction to us, He doesn't give us the big picture. He just gives us the little part that we're supposed to do. We have to understand that and accept it and still be willing to do, even though we don't understand what God has commanded us to do. I'm going to turn to Ephesians in the 6th chapter. I imagine most of you can probably quote this before I even get there. As a general, God provides us with the means to fight a war. I'll read the 13th through the... It says, "Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you may be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints, and for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may be open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel." These are implements of war. You're not going to use the shield to turn it upside down and make a birdbath out of it. You don't use a sword to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You use them for war. And that's what God's called us to do. Again, if you don't get anything out of this sermon, accept the reality that we're in a war. That should affect every decision you make. Recognize where we are. We're on a battlefield, and our lives are in balance. God's given us the weapons and the armor. Unfortunately, we're not always willing to use them. We're going to be in the fight for our life. And all we're going to have is our boxer shorts on. We can't use the shield because we haven't taken the opportunity to develop our faith through prayer. We can't use a sword because we haven't studied the scriptures enough to know how to use them properly, to know what they say, to have a hope for the future, to understand that the things that we must do and the promises that God's given us. Another aspect of a soldier is the training he receives. The biggest trainers we have are right here. The parents are the sergeants, the drill instructors in God's army. They have a responsibility to prepare their children for the battle that they will face. And they will face it. In Alma, in the 26th chapter, there's a story about a group of men who were taught from the time they were children on their mother's knee. I'm going to start with the 53rd verse. "And now I say unto you, my beloved brother Moroni, that never had I seen so great courage, nay, not amongst all the Nephites, for as I had ever called them my sons, for they were all of them very young. Even so they said unto me, Father, behold, our God is with us. He will not suffer that we shall fall. Then let us go forth. We would not slay our brethren if they would let us alone. Therefore let us go, lest they should overpower the army of Antipas." Now they never had fought, yet they did not fear death, and they did think more upon the liberty of their fathers than they did upon their lives. Yea, they had been taught by their mothers that if they did not doubt, that God would deliver them. And they rehearsed unto me the words of their mothers, saying, we do not now doubt our mothers knew. That's the biggest responsibility a mother and father have, is preparing their children for battle. But home is not the only place to receive training. That's what God made church for. Right now we're on R&R. We took a furlough from the battle for a weekend to come out of the world, to renew, re-strengthen ourselves spiritually and physically. We're going to have to go back out. Once again to the battle line and daily make that battle. But we don't have just reunions for training. If the announcement was made that on Sunday evening we're going to be trained in rocket-propelled grenades because there was an enemy approaching, how many would be there? How many would be who would recognize the threat to their life, to understand what was necessary to? But the training was for us. It was to prepare us for the battle yet to come. God's made that commandment that we're supposed to meet together oft. Once again, if He's next to us in the trenches, if we want Him by us, we better be by Him. And this is where He is. Another aspect of a soldier is he's alert. He recognizes where he is. He's cautious. Once again, if that's the only thing you get out of this sermon, recognize where you are. You are in a battlefield. Another aspect of a soldier is compassion. In a physical army, there are men that are and women that are assigned the duty of caring for the injured. In God's army, it's each of our responsibility. Look around the battlefield. Look close. Look at your families. Look at your friends. Look at the dead and dying, the wounded, spiritually, broken hearts and wounds to their spirit. As a paramedic, if I come upon an accident or any type of scene of anything, I have a duty to act by law. I'm expected to act, to render aid as best I can, that I've been trained to do. As Christians, we have a duty to act. When we see someone that's hurt, they may have barred on themselves, but they're still hurt. Does that mean we are able to convince everyone every time? No, but we sure better try, because we have a duty to act. In Luke, it talks about the man who was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho and he fell among thieves. And the thieves jumped up and down on him and wounded him and left him for dead. And two pious men, religious men, came upon the scene and walked away. How often do we do that when we see others amongst us who are struggling spiritually with a sin that they may have in their life, and we kind of put the blinders on and kind of walk by? If we do that, we're no different than those men. We have a duty to. One of the things we need to know is to know the enemy. In John, in the 8th chapter, is the simplest definition of the enemy for us. This is Christ talking about some spirit to some spirits. It says, "You are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." That's the way the devil works. In any sin, any temptation that comes along, it's always the same. He makes something appear good that isn't. He wraps a sin up in candy and makes it look pretty. Wraps it in lace and frills, make it appealing to our physical yearnings. He wraps it in a fancy paint job with a big motor. Because he knows how. He's very good at it. He is a master at camouflage. You can't always see him on the battlefield, but we recognize his effects. Another tool that Satan uses is he tries to create a division in the ranks. He tries to get inside this body. He tries to get inside this army. And if he can, he'll use offense. He'll try and get somebody to offend somebody or to take offense at somebody. Either way, it's sin. There's no other way to put it. There's two kinds of people that take offense. Those that have been treated unjustly, who have generally been treated unjustly. And those that feel they've been treated unjustly for whatever reason. But they're both the same. They're both sin. In our pride, we set ourselves up as judges. We won't forgive somebody unless they do X, Y, and Z. And that's not our place to be the judge. But you know what? We have a general who's given us procedures to know what to do. In Matthew, in the 18th chapter, in the 15th verse, it says, "Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother." It doesn't mean go run and tell everybody else. It's simple. You go and take care of it. You deal with it. God's smart. What happens if that doesn't work? Well, then you go to the next verse. "But if he will not hear thee, then take thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect it to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee an heathen man and a publican." I hope it never goes there. God's given us these procedures to heal us, not to hurt us. Sometimes we feel it's hard to forgive somebody for something they may have done. In the 23rd chapter of the 18th verse, chapter of Matthew, 23rd verse of the 18th chapter of Matthew, there's a parable. It says, "Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, One was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents, a debt that would be impossible to pay back. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife, and his children, and all that he had, in payment to be made. And the servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, and saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And the Lord of the servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt. But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. And he laid hands upon him and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me that thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison that he should pay the debt. We've each had a debt that we could not pay. Being born into sin. But Christ paid that debt for us. He forgave the debt that we could not pay. He expects us to forgive others their debts. An offense is like a debt. When an offense occurs, forgiveness is required to cancel that debt. And if you can't forgive, you can't cancel that debt. And how many of us want to be forgiven as we forgive? If you have a hard time forgiving, you should think about the reality of hell and the price that Christ paid for on the cross for your life. Bottom line is, the love of Christ must be our motivation in dealing with our brothers. When we love others as Jesus loved us, we will be free, even if they don't reciprocate that love. Christ's love is unconditional. It doesn't say, I'll forgive you, or I'll love you if you do X, Y, and Z. It's, I love you. Period. There's other things we can do as a soldier. We can choose the battleground that we're going to fight. Choose where you have an advantage. Don't place yourselves in temptation's way. You can't go to a place and say, yeah, there's temptations around, but they're small. Well, a bullet's small, but when it strikes flesh, it still rips and tears. Don't put yourself in the path of the bullet. Don't put yourself in the path of temptation. Don't place yourselves in atmospheres that would be detrimental to your spirit's health. We're supposed to be Christ-like. That's what Christian means. Christ was the ultimate soldier. He carried out his orders to the letter. God gave commandments and he fulfilled them. He sacrificed himself for us. In Deuteronomy, in the 20th chapter, I'm just going to read part of the first verse. It says, When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies, and seest horses and chariots and people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee. Yeah, we're in a battlefield. It's ugly. But we have God. We have hope. We have a future. We have a place that's prepared better for us, a better place than even Missouri. We're going to win. That's the nice thing about the Scriptures. In our lives, we can't look at the last chapter and see how it turns out. In the Scripture, we can look at in Revelations or in other places, talking about the end times, and we know who's going to win. Why on earth would you choose to be with another army? Why on earth would you not want to join this army? In the song we just sung, number 139. Last verse. Let us not be weary, comrades. Let us faint not by the way. Though the night be long and dreary, soon will dawn millennium's day. Soon will dawn millennium's day. Let us keep the campfires blazing. Let us sound abroad His word. There are glorious victories coming for the army of the Lord. We're going to win. We should take hope in that. When we see these things coming, like the Scripture says, we should look up with faith, knowing that our redemption draweth nigh. Once again, if you don't get anything else out of this evening's visit, recognize where we are. Recognize we're on a battlefield. Recognize that everywhere you look, temptations are being fired at you. Use the weapons that God's given us, the armor that He's given us. Recognize where we are. Thank you for your time.